GNSO, the process for filling board seat number 13, the open slots for affirmation of commitments review team, and finally, critical integration, the PDP.
In Nairobi, is everybody back in the room, or if not, can we go ahead and take our seats and get started? We're here with the registries.
Yeah, Mason, this is Stefan. That's what I was going to tell you, that not everyone's back yet.
Right.
But
no problem.
You can go ahead and start, and I'm sure that will draw people back in.
Well, if you don't mind, why don't you just ask folks to take their seats? We'll give you a minute.
Well, they're not actually in the room. I can go and chase them.
Oh, there you go.
But
okay.
You know,
we'll
I mean, considering the time for you guys over there, just go ahead and start, you know.
Actually, I prefer just to take 1 minute, and I'll ask Tim to wave his hands around and get everybody settled down.
Okay.
All right, so give us 1 minute then.
So there's a request here to see John Berryhill on camera. Can you get John Berryhill on camera, please?
We could if he were in the room.
He's left and he's not coming back because he's shy.
Okay. Okay, we're gonna go ahead and get started. I'm gonna turn the floor over to David Maher.
Thank you. I think we can do this slightly out of order. Process for filling board seat number 13. We requested votes from the counselors and the one non-com appointee, but have heard nothing. We've requested votes on now several emails, but still waiting. Yeah, we're waiting for Edmund, and I've heard nothing from him. So,
who was it? Who was the email from?
Or
Mason?
I sent one. I think Mason sent one, and you sent one. So,
well, I sent one to Terry.
Terry, yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't send it because I didn't see anything from either one of you. I'll try and find it now.
Chuck, this is Stefan. Chuck, can you
go
hear
ahead,
me?
Stefan.
Yeah, we didn't get that little back and forth that you had with David. It wasn't very clear. Can you just say if is there any problem with that motion?
Stefan, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I did not, Caroline and I did not receive the message requesting our vote from Mason and David, so we're just trying to get that straightened out.
But are you guys over there okay with the fact that I've put Bruce's name forward to be inserted in the motion, or should I stop that?
I think that's fine.
I
Thanks.
Agree.
Thanks.
There we go. Now we have four of the seven councilors here, and so their votes can be recorded, and at least we can get the, make sure the motion can move forward. Not that we shouldn't collect the other votes, but I think we're fine with that.
Okay, thank you. The other item connected is the process for the election of the vice chair of the GNSO. The last time in Seoul was a rather informal proceeding. The good news is that it worked. Does anyone have any ideas on how to proceed the next time around? It's what, an annual election? Is it a one-year term? So coming up in next fall, we will need to have a process.
Can I say something? Stefan here.
Go ahead.
Thanks. My understanding is that we don't necessarily need to have a process. It's up to each house to decide how they want to do it. So it may be the case that people found the lack of process uncomfortable in Seoul, which I can perfectly understand. But if that's not the case, do we really need to have a formal process or not?
Stefan, I kind of think it'd be helpful. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but even as we found just in confirming the election of Bruce, because this House structure is really more of a ethereal sort of thing rather than, you know, that we meet together and so forth and make decisions, I think it would be helpful to have a process. Now, maybe this is a way forward. I don't know that we need to develop the process in this meeting, but if we got a couple volunteers or maybe one volunteer from each stakeholder group to come up with something and then put it before the two stakeholder groups, that might be a simple way forward.
I think what we probably need more than a process is a timeline, because I think part of the problem, at least to me, in Seoul was that we had a contracted party house meeting on Saturday. I was tied up in another meeting that I really couldn't leave. There was a lot of uncertainty about who would be present. As it turned out, there we did have a quorum, which was not expected. And I think that the idea of having a contracted party house meeting on Saturday, if the usual schedule applies, where the official opening of the meeting is Monday, having a Saturday house meeting, to me, is too early. Does anyone have any feelings about that?
Do you mean, David, the Saturday when we of the weekend or the week that we need to make the election? Seems to me that's too late.
Oh no! What concerned me was having it before. It requiring everybody to be present on Saturday morning before.
Got it.
The ICANN meeting.
By the way, whatever we do, process, timeline, whatever, we need to sync it with the council election of chair. Recall that one of the difficulties in this is we didn't know who was going to be chair, and that election was afterward. Now, I'm not sure how we sync those two, but it'd be nice if a couple people put their heads together and worked out a proposal. Again, it doesn't have to be elaborate.
Yeah,
Chuck, this is Stefan. I thoroughly agree with what you've just said. I think one of the problems that we had in Seoul was not knowing which order the elections would work. You know, it was our first time in this new process, and we, if you all remember, we did have trouble with that. So I fully support what you've just said.
Thanks, Stefan. You know, and we won't have one of the problems we had then. Keep in mind that we still had to approve, the council had to approve the new procedures, and that included the election of chair and vice chair and so forth. So we had an awkwardness in Seoul that we won't have in the future. And so it's actually possible that the council could work on the election of chair quite a bit earlier than when the chair is seated, and then that would give some time to each to the houses to elect their vice chair. And I think, you know, just thinking out loud right now, that might be a useful way to go.
This is Mason. I agree with you, Chuck. And as a way forward, I might suggest that what we do is we involve maybe a team of four or five people, maybe at least one or two counselors, to just come up with a simple, straightforward procedure for designing an elect process for the vice chair. If you like, I'll be glad to take the lead on getting that team together and making a proposal to our stakeholder groups. Does that sound good? Rob Hall?
I want to be careful not to put too much process into place here. So it seems to me that for the election of the chair of the GNSO, our house, or in fact each constituency in our house, basically has a virtual veto, because you have to get to 66% of our house. I think there's always going to be horse trading. You know, hey, we'll support you for chair, you support this person for vice chair. That's going to happen regardless of whether you put a big formal process into place or not. It seems to me in Seoul it worked pretty efficiently. Like, we're such a small group of really only having two constituencies in our house that each one of us, if we don't agree, nothing's going to happen. So, you know, I think what's going to happen is the two exocoms are going to get together and decide. But to put a big formal process into place seems like it may be cumbersome, and you're just going to create more problems and more angst, if you will. It happened fairly simply in Seoul. I think until there's a problem, we should just keep doing that. Get the two groups together, say, hey, what do you think? I mean, I was on the exocom at the time for the registrars, and I remember our debates where, you know, we started tying ourselves in knots of, well, if we support this person, will they support that person? And the reality was, once the leadership got together and talked about it, it all worked out pretty easily.
Chuck, Stefan, any thoughts on that? Chuck?
Well, I'll jump in first, Stefan, then you can if you like. I don't think anybody's talking about a heavy-duty process, and I think David's probably right. Mostly we need a timeline, and we need to coordinate the election of vice chair with the election of chair so that we don't have that handicap next time, which we did this time.
Stefan?
Yeah, no, I don't have anything more to add to what Chuck just said. I'd just like to say that I'm happy to help with that informal group that you've just volunteered to chair, Mason, if you need me.
Oh, I need you, all right. Thank you.
Who's going to volunteer from the registry? Thanks, David. And then I think we need a counselor, too, based on Mason's suggestion. So there's only two of us here. So
I'll send a note out to our stakeholder group. And then if you want to do the same in here to decide who's going to be on that team, that's fine. You want to do that? Okay. Eric?
Guys?
We've lost some people in terms of audio, and they've asked me to relay their objection or protest.
To what?
The fact that they can't hear. There's no audio feed for the people outside.
No, I know. That's what they're protesting to?
Yeah. Not the substantive issue. Just
okay.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. David?
Guys, we can't hear what you're saying.
Is Mikey around? No, I guess he left. We're working on it. For what little comfort that is. Yeah, I think we'll just move along to item three on our agenda. The review team for the affirmation of commitments review. It would be nice. The idea here was that try to coordinate our efforts on that. Have you had a discussion of your recommendations?
Yeah, I do kind of want, but all right. It's not making me very popular. Anyway, I think what we had Peter in our stakeholder group meeting for a while today and kind of presented some questions and concerns to him. And from the description that we got of, you know, what they had expected was that, you know, basically what would happen is that the stakeholder groups or advisory committees would basically be vetting the these applicants. So in other words, are they from the supporting organization or advisory council that they purport to be from? Do they meet the requirements as set out in both the call for applicants as well as the GNSO requirements or whatever SO? And then they were expecting that those applicants, if they met those requirements, then would be so-called endorsed. Of course, that's a different process than what the GNSO Council came up with. So what we had asked was, you know, would they consider applicants or that a stakeholder group endorsed if they didn't come directly from the GNSO Council, and it sounded like that would be the case. But I think where we're at right now is looking at, you know, can we narrow down to one, or are we going to actually endorse more than one, maybe up to four? I think it looks possible right now, and present those perhaps, if necessary, directly to Peter and Janice for consideration.
Rob? Sorry, if I can just clarify something I think I heard Tim say that I don't think I heard Peter say. Peter was not using the word endorse. Peter was very clear about are they representative of the constituency? In other words, are they from a stakeholder group? So he wasn't so much looking for the GNSO to bless one and put them forward. He was looking for a confirmation that they are part of a stakeholder group or part of the GNSO. So I'm a little concerned when I hear that the GNSO is going through a big process to basically elect who their representative is going to be, because I think Peter feels that's his job, is he's going to pick from a slate of people we put forward. So I think it's important to keep track of, you know, it's do they represent as opposed to are they endorsed by.
Rob? This is Stefan.
Go ahead, Stefan.
Thanks, Mason. Rob, I don't think that's actually totally true in the fact that I'm not sure that we actually know what they expect, but I'm not sure they know what they expect. So I'm wondering now, listening to all these discussions, if it's not the simplest thing isn't just for us to determine the way we want to do it. What do we want to do? I mean, Tim has suggested, and Tim, you'll correct me if I misunderstood you, that we put forward the candidates that, you know, we make sure we choose the candidates that we want instead of just not choosing the candidates that we don't know because we haven't had time to meet the people. And so we, by default, just choose the people that we know from previous collaborations. So perhaps the thing that we want to look at here is what does the GNSO want to achieve? And I'm not sure that, between us, the registries and the registrars, I think we'd probably see eye to eye on that, but I'm not sure the other house does. I don't know what Chuck's feeling on that is.
Well, actually, I don't. You know, I've discussed this on the council list, and there's really no support from anybody else that's interested in changing the process at this point. So, that, you know, that's fine, but I don't think that necessarily has to dictate what we as a stakeholder group do. And so, you know, again, my concern is that, you know, we have a list of four candidates. And I think it would be unfortunate, given that it appears to me, even though some of us may not know all of them, that they all four would qualify, to say, well, we're only going to select one of those, and then to see the other three not even be presented to Peter and Janice or be considered. I just don't think that's fair to the applicants, who I don't think applied with that particular understanding.
Right. We have a question here from Michaela and from our stakeholder group. Michaela, go ahead.
I would agree with Rob. I mean, based on what Peter was saying to us earlier today, from what I can understand, all they're asking us to do is to say, do we recognize person X as being part of the GNSO, yes or no? Do we have a massive issue with that person, yes or no? And that's it. I mean, we're not being asked to choose anything beyond that. So, I mean, think that's what that was. He was pretty clear about that. I mean, yet we seem to be now into an entire, you know, beauty pageant type scenario, which I think is a bit strange.
Chuck?
This is Chuck. I think what's coming down to is what we think the word endorse means. I believe that most people on the GNSO Council believe that endorse means how it's usually used, that we endorse candidates or we don't. I understand that there's some disagreement on that. Right now, we have a procedure that the council approved, and if the council doesn't change that procedure, that's what we're going to use, and stakeholder groups are working on that today. Some are probably finished. In fact, the registries are. I made a statement on the council list today that if the just like Tim just said, if the registry stakeholder group is unable to follow that process, that's the option, unless the council as a whole decides to change that process. So and the process right now is that each stakeholder group would endorse one candidate, and that candidate would be submitted as is with no council action. And there are two open slots, one fully open slot and one for unaffiliated candidates. In other words, candidates that aren't affiliated with any stakeholder group. And the council will decide on those two slots with a simple majority vote of both houses in order to be endorsed by the council, and that will be attempted on Monday morning.
Okay, so this is Mason. If I understand where all this boils down, it is that the GNSO has set not a process, but a deadline. Well, to the extent of the process as it exists, it is produce for us an endorsement is it the 15th?
It comes on. It's the 14th.
14th, right.
It's Sunday.
Sunday. And we don't care how you get to it, but give us one.
Yes, right. And then also, you were asked to inform your counselors which candidates they can support in the council meeting, a special council meeting that will be held. It hasn't been published yet. I've asked it to be scheduled Monday morning on the two open slots.
Okay, got it.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay, so at that point, if I understand correctly, this group, the registry group, has made its selection. Okay, so then it's our turn to get it done by whatever process we come up with, whether really we like it or not.
You want to give that, Caroline?
Yeah, it's just an open or closed session. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's pretty obvious anyway from the registries. Brian Cutes was the only registry representative, so he will be our nominee. Our
Caroline, we can't hear you. Please speak closer to the mic.
I'm sorry. What I'm saying is for the registries, Brian Cutes, who's, well, I guess he could be seen as the only registry candidate. We can talk about some of the others and their affiliations, but Brian Cutes will be from the registry. We're also happy to support the unaffiliated slot as well. We can name a lane for that, if that's helpful. Gillian Perry.
Okay. Okay, so as far as this agenda item goes, David, I think the ball's in the registrar's court just to finish our business.
Just one more thing, Mason, if I can. This is Chuck again. We also in the registry identified a list of candidates that we would support for the open slot. And so we've directed our counselors, if, you know, depending on how things go, and keep in mind there's an evaluation team that the council formed that is doing some review and going to submit some recommendations for the purpose of facilitating the council's decision. And that's due Sunday as well. And then so we've given our council direction, hey, we will support any of these candidates, and it's actually several. that we would support for that open slot, and depending on how things go in the council meeting, then I think they have enough we have enough direction that we know who we can support and who we would not support.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you, Chuck. David, you want to take it from here? And then if I may, our business as a stakeholder group is going to be concluded after this agenda item, but there's a couple of wrap-up things I'd like to take care of before everybody in Nairobi heads out. So, okay.
The only other agenda item is the question of the vertical integration PDP that is currently in process. Do any of your group want to comment on that?
I'm sorry, I admit I was talking to Steve. What is it? What was the question?
About the vertical integration PDP.
Yeah, whether we've talked about it?
No.
Yeah, we have spoken about it. Quite a bit, actually. Jeff has been pretty active on that. Jeff Eckhouse, would you like to take that up a bit?
Well, I don't know what you – I mean, you guys put up the agenda item. Is there something that you'd want to discuss or bring forward to talk to us about? We participated, and I believe it's going to the GNSO vote tomorrow, and I don't know if there's something else you guys would like to bring up about it. Sorry, when I say you guys, I mean the registries.
The council action item for tomorrow in the meeting is to vote on the approval of the charter. And I think that's all ready to go. In fact, there's a red line that Glenn is just waiting for of the charter. Some changes were amended, some wording changes were made in the charter that the drafting team developed, and those have all been accepted as friendly amendments, and it's just a matter of I think the working team or drafting team approving the edits that Glenn showed in the red line, and it's just a matter of council acting on approving that charter, and it looks from my perspective as chair that'll probably be a fairly simple agenda item.
Hi, so this is Jeff Newman. Question for everyone. There were definitions that were contained within the charter. I think those definitions initially came from Milton. Is it clear now in the charter that those definitions can be revised without going back to the council? Because I didn't agree with those definitions that are in there. I think that those are statements of policy that the working group need to work on. So my question is, hopefully, will the working group get to revise those definitions in accordance with their process?
Hey, Jeff, it's Jeff Eckhouse here. I believe that is the case, that we agreed that those were working definitions and that the working group would define those further as a working group went forward and did not need to go back to council for the definitions on there.
Yeah, Jeff.
Hold on, Tim,
and then Tim, and then Stephen.
Yeah, actually, Jeff, that's not the case. The charter was modified. Well, friendly amendment was offered by myself to Stephen and Mary, I think, who were kind of representing that group or taking things back to that group for modification. So a number of different amendments were offered, and one of them actually required that any substantive changes to the charter would come back to the council for approval. And so my assumption would be that if any, like, for example, the definition of vertical integration, if that changes, that significantly changes the charter, what this group will be doing, that should come back to the council. That should not be just independently decided by the working group itself.
Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say exactly the same thing. I was going to make that clarification, so Tim just did it. Did so.
Okay.
So there could be non-substantive changes, but if the chair deems it substantive, it comes back to the council for approval.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for that clarification. It was for non-substantive changes. So sorry about it. Forgot about your friendly amendment on that.
Okay. Does that take care of that issue for now?
Well, this is Jeff. I still have a question on that. I don't think the definitions that were contained in the charter are actually accurate. But I didn't want it to interfere with going forward with the PDP simply because I don't agree with the definitions. I do think that other people need to look at those definitions, and I'm kind of concerned a little bit if we're saying that the definitions can't be changed without bringing it back to the council. I mean, I've heard what you said about non-substantive changes, but again, I don't think it should be the practice of a chartering group to define certain terms that are integral in the policy. But that's my own personal view, especially on this issue, though, when definitions of vertical integration, definitions of ownership or control or those other types of things that are integral within that should not be left to a small draft chartering group and then approved by the council, then requiring any amendments to that to go back to the council.
Yeah, Jeff.
Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah, Jeff, Stephen again. I think that point has actually been pretty well, you know, understood, taken on board, made clear. If you've been following what the drafting team, the way it was working and the conversations that there were within the team, you will know that the NCSG and others wanted to put forward definitions. The registry representative actually suggested that might not be a good idea. Jeff Eckhaus, I forget what your position was or what the registrar's position was, because I was the coordinator of the group. I held a neutral position, so I didn't weigh into those debates. But I think that point has been made clear. But my suggestion there, going forward, would be to have strong participation from the contracted parties on the working group.
This is Jeff. I think you will certainly have strong participation from at least our stakeholder group. In fact, I wouldn't doubt if everyone in the stakeholder group volunteered, or a good number of us, but you'll certainly have that.
Could I ask a question, Jeff?
I just wanted to add that if it's kind of late now to try to probably be modifying this charter, but if the definitions were a problem, they probably shouldn't have been in there and left, so I don't know how they got it. But if we're going to have definitions that actually are defining this charter and what this group is going to do, then those are things that fall under the management of the GNSO as far as I'm concerned, and they should come back to the council for approval. But if those definitions, shouldn't be in there, then maybe that's something that should be considered in regards to the charter before it's actually approved.
Yeah, Tim.
Did you want to have a cue?
Sorry? What was that?
Go ahead, Steph.
I was just going to reply to Tim that as the drafting team stands, we're not the only ones to have an opinion on this. And, once again, I think the definitions are in there because the drafting team as a whole wanted them in there. At this point, I would rather avoid going back and having a debate on the actual charter itself. We've accepted a few amendments from yourself and Caroline. I would much rather just push this forward to the working group. And get the drafting team work out of the way.
Jeff, did you want to chime in on this? Or maybe we'll close it off.
Yeah, this is John. Okay. We had one question in the room here. and that's for the registries and the registry stakeholder group, whether you have a position on whether the DAG should wait for the conclusion of this PDP, or do you agree with the staff position that the two processes should go in parallel?
Ideally, they should go in parallel, and I find it a matter of great concern that it's possible that you have one policy for one group of applicants and then an entirely different policy for the next round. I think that's the worst of all possible solutions or end of this process.
Yeah,
I agree. Anyone else want to comment on that?
Hey, John, this is Jeff Newman. I think it's a tough issue because we never actually supported having a PDP in the first place, right? The registries were against it, or, well, we actually abstained but publicly, but we were against having a PDP, but we're kind of stuck with it simply because, obviously, there's not a high threshold to get the PDP in place. But to the extent it has to move parallel, you know, the registry position has always been that there shouldn't be any changes to the vertical separation issue until after the PDP goes forward. So the answer, the short answer to the question would be that the registries feel like it should happen in parallel, but until the PDP is completed, there shouldn't be any changes to existing practice.
Obviously, we could spend some time debating that, Jeff, but probably not today. So knowing that the registrar stakeholder group and the registry stakeholder group both opposed, and I guess in ICANN world, an abstention is a no vote, right? So knowing that we both opposed the initiation of this PDP in the first place, what steps do you think we should take to continue down that road and essentially, or should we try to kill it essentially?
Can I say something while everybody's thinking over in Reston?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I'd just like to widen this just a tad. One of the worries that we had, and certainly I had with this, was, you know, as you know, I started the process off by submitting a motion saying that we would not initiate, we, the GNSO Council, would not initiate a PDP, and Mike Rodenbaugh submitted a motion saying that there would be one, and so he carried the day there. I have grave reservations with the amount of resources that this thing is going to take up. As you know, the GNSO is overworked as it is. The volunteers on the GNSO are overworked, and staff actually came out on this and said that they couldn't cope with this. So to which Mike Rodenbaugh answered, we'll just hire more staff. So I think we have a wider problem here, the contracted parties house. The more resources the GNSO's work consumes and the general community work consumes, the more we will be asked to finance it because we are the main contributors to the ICANN budget. So unless we're able to draw the line somewhere, and this was a prime example of something that in my view should never have happened, we have a situation which worries me. I don't know if we can kill, just to answer your question, John, I don't know if we can kill this PDP now that it's going ahead, but if there is a way to do that, I'd certainly like to hear about it.
Chuck?
Of course, the council can always kill a PDP. They've already voted to initiate a PDP, so that vote would have to be reversed. Understand that the thresholds for approving a PDP are 60. There's two ways it can happen. I think it's 33% of each house or 66% of one house. And in this case, what happened was 66%, well over 66% of one house was able to vote in favor of the PDP, and that's what happened. Could that change? Personal opinion, I doubt it would change if we tried to kill it. I mean, that doesn't mean it can't be tried, but one of the concerns we as registries have had all along is being perceived as doing anything to delay new GTLDs, because that's not our intent. That's not why we opposed the PDP. In fact, that was the reason why we opposed the PDP, because we thought it might cause delays. So we should keep that in mind. We certainly, as registries, do not want to come across as delaying PDPs. And I'm sorry for jumping in front of Eric here, but he had the mic.
Thank you, Chuck. Eric Bruner Williams, CORE. Following up on Jeff's comments, CORE's position has been all along that we did not see the necessity for a change, and in fact, we see serious downsides to a change. The question of whether or not it should go in parallel to the process, which suffers inordinate or unpredictable delays already, is a difficult one because, as Chuck just pointed out, if we answer correctly, then we're causing an additional delay. But it's really difficult to see how these things can actually be done in parallel. There really is some necessity for serialization. There are applications, or drafted applications, which require no changes in the rules, and these applications essentially are being told they have to wait until we can figure out how to change the rules that they don't need. So I'll stop there.
Unless anyone else has some further comment on this, I think that wraps up our agenda. Excuse me.
There's one other issue that that we do need to talk about. I realize folks in Nairobi are getting very close to closing time there. So Steve Holston from VeriSign is here on an issue that's been debated a couple of times, but it's important to both of our houses. So, Steve, I know you just want to make folks aware of what's happening.
Sure. Thank you, Mason. I wanted to update folks regarding that unilateral right for ICANN to amend contracts. It's of great interest to everybody, obviously, in both of the contracted party houses, if ICANN can decide on their own whether to change the contract midstream. So, again, asking yourself, would you sign a contract where the other party to that contract can change the terms? In Seoul, we raised the issue. Even Peter Dengate Thrush had said he wouldn't advise anyone to sign a contract like that. In the 4 months since then, ICANN staff has clung very closely to the position they have to have the right to amend unilaterally. And today, Peter Dengate Thrush moved more towards that position in agreeing, well, we need the right to unilaterally amend. I think everybody should be concerned from an investment standpoint, an operational standpoint, being able to justify that you've got a contract, but that contract can change. I think that the reason the contracted parties need to be righteously indignant about this, the ecosystem as it has been to this point allows for enough certainty, but still flexibility to change through the consensus policy process. We've asked ICANN what they need beyond the consensus policy process to change, and we've not gotten a good reason or a good explanation. Rather, they seem to want to change most anything. And if you look at this in a really big picture level, a little background noise. In the ICANN context, the laws and the regulations are essentially the terms and conditions that each of us have in our contract. So whereas a normal balance of power has an executive branch, a legislative branch, a judicial branch, and if you want to change a law, you need to get the legislature involved. Okay, thanks. If ICANN has the unilateral rights to amend contract terms, without going back through a consensus policy, which gets the community involved, it is essentially the equivalent of the executive branch making law. Of course, having a legislative branch is noisy and it takes a long time and it's challenging and difficult, but the community is represented and heard only if that noisy process actually takes place. So I think, number one, the registrar stakeholder group was very helpful in voicing opposition to that model. I think they need to, you folks in chiming in against it again would be very helpful. But if we in the community allow ICANN to amend contracts because it wants to, that is a very dangerous thing for the ecosystem.
Yeah, just speaking for our stakeholder group, number one, thank you, Steve, for bringing that up, because that is a scary scenario. It's one under which we certainly don't want to operate. As a stakeholder group, I know we've been vocal on that before. I see that John wants to have a moment of input on this. John, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for raising that, Steve. Obviously, the registrar twice now we've made a statement that ICANN should not be able to unilaterally change contracts. But I don't. You have to be a little careful, I think, in the argument and not overselling that, in that VeriSign has a contract with every registrar, in which case VeriSign has the right to change the contract with ICANN approval. You do not have to come to us. So when you talk about the rhetoric, we should keep that in mind, that you have the right to do what you're saying ICANN shouldn't. And the only safeguard that you have as VeriSign is that ICANN needs to approve any change. So there is one little safety net there. So the question is, does VeriSign really have the right to unilaterally change the contract? So and then the corollary is, would ICANN really have the right to unilaterally change the contract? Obviously, we are all against unilateral changes to contracts. So the question is there some kind of safety net or some kind of process that the registries would think would be, give them some comfort? And I don't think you could rely only on consensus policy, because they're going through the process that we all just went through in the registrar constituency and changing the RAA, there are issues that come up related to issues that are outside the picket fence and not subject to consensus policy. So how do those provisions get changed in a registry agreement? We're all in agreement that ICANN shouldn't be allowed to unilaterally change them, but is there some way or some mechanism to change that would give the registries some comfort?
Yeah, thanks, John. I agree with the first premise. If the registrar agreement is going to be changed, that safeguard is that ICANN has to approve it. And if they are a neutral arbiter, I think that is an important safeguard. What we are going to do from here is to try to narrow the scope of what ICANN can unilaterally amend to try to make it something that's reasonable. If it's something that is beyond the picket fence, let's constrain it as narrowly as we can so that it makes sense to the community. The real ticket here is not giving a carte blanche to change whatever they want. And to this point, ICANN staff has wanted a very far-reaching ability to change everything, because when we say what's important to you that is outside of the picket fence, their response is, well, pretty much everything. So I think it's an important thing to keep your eye on, to watch it carefully, and there are a lot of subtleties and nuances, and you're well aware of those, John. Your finger is on the right point.
Okay. Rob, let's do one last comment, if I may, on this issue from Rob, because we're almost right out of time in Nairobi.
I have two concerns, just quickly. One is, I think whatever they get through in your contracts, they're going to force down us as well. So I think that's why it's important for the community to stay together on this issue, because we've seen that in the past. They take one, even within registry contracts, they take one and try and force it on everybody else. But I am concerned with one thing I think you said, and I think you want to be very careful with it. You said you didn't think ICANN staff should be able to change it without going through the community process. I'd be more fearful of the community process being allowed to change a contract than ICANN staff. So I don't think you want to say publicly, hey, we're okay if the community says they should change our contract, because I think that's where the impetus will come from, is the community trying to say, hey, we want this in the registry contract. I think so far ICANN staff, from our perspective, or mine personally, have been more reasonable in what should and shouldn't change in a contract than some of the people in the community. So I think you want to be very careful to say it, you know, that we're okay with it if the community okays it, or it goes through this legislative process as opposed to the executive process. I think you may want some combination of both, if at all. But I think the stance probably should be no, not at all.
Okay, I don't see anybody else in the registrar queue, so if I can, just because the folks there need to pack up before they get tossed out, please close this off and agree that our two groups will keep a close eye on this and make sure that, you know, we find some nuanced, careful position to make sure that we don't get taken advantage of inappropriately. Okay, so thank you, Steve, for bringing that up. There's no one else in the registrar queue, so before I close the meeting off, I want to do one thing. I want to say thank you in particular to the registries, particularly VeriSign and PIR and Afilias and especially Neustar, because they came together and put together a remote meeting site for anybody who was interested in attending, footed the bill, made sure that all the phone lines worked and everything. I particularly want to thank Tim Switzer and his team because they did an amazing job. So on behalf of the registrars that are here, thank you for making this available to us. Much appreciated.
And did all the registrars get the invitation for tomorrow?
Event?
Did all the registrars get the invitation for tomorrow?
Oh, yes, for the one here?
Good.
Yeah. All right.
To what?
In that instance, then the registrar meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody, and have a good evening over there.
We'll have a short break again and then resume.